South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, August 26, 2022. The U.S. Embassy in South Sudan is calling on the leaders of the country to respect press freedom.
Today marks 5 years since the death of American journalist Christopher Allen, who was killed on August 26, 2017. The U.S. Embassy renews its calls to the government of South Sudan to conduct a credible inquiry into Mr. Allen's death.
And a man is sentenced to death for killing a chief in eastern Equatorial State.
The court convicted the accused number one to death by hanging by the neck until he died under Section 206 of the Penal Code of the Republic of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Embassy in Juba is calling on the government of South Sudan to conduct a credible inquiry into the death of Christopher Allen, an American journalist who was killed on August 26, 2017, while covering clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Force and the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. The public affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy in Juba says the inquiry will help give Mr. Allen's family the closure they deserve by holding accountable those responsible for his death. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
28-year-old freelance journalist Christopher Allen was killed when fighting erupted between opposition and government forces in Kaya, Central Equatorial State, along the border between South Sudan and Uganda in 2017. The South Sudan Information Minister and government spokesman Michael Makwey leveled Allen as a white rebel killed in clashes. Makwey later changed the narrative and said Allen was killed in crossfire as government troops fought to repulse the rebels. The U.S. Embassy in Juba issued a fresh statement today, renewing its calls to the government of South Sudan to investigate the killing. Molly D. Burkana is the public affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy in Juba.
Today marks 5 years since the death of American journalist Christopher Allen, who was killed on August 26, 2017, while covering clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. The U.S. Embassy renews its calls to the government of South Sudan to conduct a credible inquiry into Mr. Allen's death and to share its findings with Mr. Allen's family.
Berkana says the government of the United States is deeply concerned about press freedom in South Sudan. He says the embassy has witnessed the recent and ongoing detention, harassment, and kidnapping of journalists just because they were doing their job of informing the public on what is happening in the country.
The job of a journalist is to report on what's happening, to investigate, to find information, and to share that information. This is the job of a journalist, and this is a key function in a democratic society. Citizens deserve to know what's going on. And in a country like South Sudan, the role of journalists is even more important, especially on radio, where sometimes it's hard to travel or to get to remote places. So the role of journalists in South Sudan is critical. The citizens know and deserve to know what's going on.
Berkana says press freedom is essential in a democratic society, especially in a country like South Sudan, where the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement is ongoing. He says press freedom allows journalists to report on differing viewpoints from across the spectrum of South Sudanese society.
You have a process that's happening that really requires inclusivity. So the U.S. would like to see an inclusive process with the peace process, and we realize that journalists have a key role in that. You know, and again, the role of journalists is to investigate, to find information, and to share that information. The population deserves to know what's going on. They deserve to have access to information to make informed decisions.
Barkana says the American government would like to see the South Sudan respect and protect journalists and ensure they can do their jobs without interference. Since South Sudan's independence in July 2011, freedom of expression has been severely restricted, with journalists and media practitioners either detained, arrested, or even killed in line of their duty. The government and its supporters say the media environment has improved in recent years. But journalist Manyuan Mayan Manyuan, who works for Sawa Sawa, the South Sudanese online news agency, disagrees.
The first thing that I would want to underscore is that the media fraternity of South Sudan is still challenging, though it is not compared to the previous 3 years or 5 years ago. The journalists attacked in the line of duty. For example, recently you might have learned of the DOA journalist who was arrested during the civil process. That was concerning the cost of living in town. So all these kind of things, they amount to really a challenging environment for journalists.
When contacted for comment, Michael McQuay, the South Sudan Information Minister and government spokesperson, says there is nothing to investigate regarding Hallen's death because he was in the country illegally when he was killed.
As I said last time, I said we have killed a white rebel. This man, when the rebels attacked Kaya, he came with them. Whether he was a journalist or not a journalist, he was in the line. And in the course of shooting, he was shot. He entered South Sudan illegally, came and participated with the rebels and attacked Kaya, and he was shot like other rebels who were killing Kaya. The only thing we did was to sympathize with his condition, and we brought his body and handed over to their embassy here when they identified that he was their man. Now, this is the point. Kale, you have to investigate. Should we investigate the rebels as to why did they attack Kaya, or what do they want us to do? They say these are people who are just saying the impossible.
Even if journalists complain about restrictions, detention and harassment, McQuay says that reporters in South Sudan are enjoying the same freedoms as journalists in other countries in the region.
Our journalists here are the only people here in the region who are enjoying full rights. However, the VOA with their journalist who was arrested did a mistake. They decided to employ a journalist who is not registered with us, claiming her to be a freelance journalist. So when she was arrested because she failed to produce an identity card to identify that she is a journalist. So she was arrested among the demonstrators because the demonstration was without license. The journalists are already protected. The journalists are required to conform. They are required to conform because we are giving them all the necessary protection. But it is when they disobey and decide to go their own way that they fall into crisis.
Earlier this month, the South Sudan National Police Service arrested Ding Magot, a freelance journalist who contributes to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus program in the capital, Juba. Magot was later released after spending 8 days in jail without charge. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
A mobile court in eastern Equatorial State has sentenced a man to death by hanging for the murder of a traditional chief in eastern Equatorial State in July. The killing led to increased tension between the host community and pastoralists from the Jonglei State. Lord Mutach was found guilty of murdering Chief Ebele John at a fundraising event in Nimule. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
Godfrey Victor Bula, a lawyer who represented the victim's family, confirmed the death by hanging verdict.
So yesterday what happened was that the court convicted the accused number one to death by hanging by the neck until he died under section 206 of the Penal Code of the Republic of South Sudan, that is murder, and then accused number two was convicted and sentenced to 3 years imprisonment.
The accused were represented by two lawyers in court. The verdict's defense attorney has 15 days to file an appeal against the ruling. The South Sudan Penal Code Act provides for the death penalty and allows for the execution of individuals convicted of a variety of crimes, including murder. The sentence can be imposed by either civilian or military courts. South Sudan in Focus reported that the Madi community was meeting in the morning of July 11th to discuss bilateral arrangements for two deceased community members in the office of Nimule traditional chief John Ebele. A young man suspected of being from Urol stormed into the meeting and tried to snap photos of the chief. But young people from Madi community attending the meeting told him to stop taking pictures. The man reverted his gun from outside, then began firing at random and killed the chief. The Madi community, outraged over the killing of their relatives, protested, at the time disrupting traffic on the Juba-Nimule highway. The case has attracted a lot of attention from the community, and there are fears the decision by the mobile court could trigger violence in the community. Some people have already fled their homes for fear of literal attacks from parties that are not satisfied with the verdict. But Advocate Bula says the community has been told that the decision is part of process of justice.
Nimule was a little bit very tense area where people of this case has taken a different dimension. But we clearly told the communities in Nimule that criminal responsibility is an individual responsibility. It has nothing to do with a tribe of accused or complainer, or it has nothing to do with the religion of the accused or complainer.
Ramadan Igal Muhammad, a paternal uncle of the deceased, welcomed the court's verdict and sentence.
The decision the court took yesterday to sentence him by hanging is the best to get justice, because I had also wanted him to be hung. I do not want my son to be confiscated. If he is hung, we shall be happy. But if he is not hung, we shall not be happy, because the conflict between us and his family will continue. But if he is hung, there will be no conflict between us.
Muhammad says he would like to witness the execution of the convict.
I have a concern whether I will be informed about the time he will be taken for hanging, because last time I was told to wait. I will confirm if he is hung only if I and the maternal uncle of my son see with our own eyes that yes, he has been hung.
Muhammad says the late Chief Ebele left 15 children from his three wives. He says the third wife, who was living with the late chief at the time he was killed, was pregnant and gave birth 2 weeks ago. For VOA News, I am Sheila Pony in Juba.
Still in South Sudan, the Transitional Government of National Unity says it will now graduate the unified forces on August 30th. South Sudan is supposed to have graduated 83,000 unified forces drawn from various parties to take charge of security during the transitional period. The parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement have agreed to graduate the first batch of 53,000 forces in 18 training centers across the country. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
South Sudan People Defense Forces, or SSPDF, spokesperson Major General Lul Rai Kong says preparation for the graduation of the unified forces are in their advanced stage. Kong says more than 10,000 unified forces are expected to graduate in the Greater Equatorial Region on August 30th in Juba. He says the government is set to graduate the necessary unified forces in three phases. The first phase would be from the Greater Equatorial Region.
Everything is set. We are doing it in phases. We are going to start with forces from Gorom, that's for VIP protection, the police at the Rajab, prison department at the Logo, and senior officers for police at Rambur. So these forces from these four training centers We are going to take samples from each training center. They will be brought to Juba to symbolize the graduation of this batch.
Kong says the decision to graduate the forces in phases was taken due to financial challenges the government faces. He says the first batch from the Greater Equatorial Region will be followed by another batch from Greater Barkazal and Upper Nile Region. Kong says, as part of the preparation, the government this morning received the necessary Unified Forces uniform from Sudan ahead of the graduation.
And that plane basically brought a very important consignment that we have been waiting for a very long time. They brought uniforms for civil service, defense, civil defense service, prison service, wildlife, and missing items for South Sudan National Police Service. And when I say the missing items included belts, boots, capes, and T-shirts, all those missing items were brought in the morning. These forces that I've mentioned now, the pre-graduation requirements are complete and they are set to graduate on the 30th.
On Wednesday this week, Presidential Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin paid a visit to Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni to extend an invitation for the upcoming graduation of the necessary unified forces. Upon his return to Juba, Benjamin told reporters that Ugandan's President Museveni indicated that he would attend to grace the graduation of the unified forces set to take place on August 30th in Juba.
His Excellency President Museveni received the message with great appreciation and indicated definitely he will be communicating with His Excellency President Salva, and all the possibility of his attendance was imminent. It was a good visit. We were able also to explain other issues of bilateral importance that His Excellency the President equally responded to, that the relations between South Sudan and the Republic of Uganda are always together in coordination at the regional level as well as at the international level. It was indeed a wonderful meeting.
Last year, South Sudan's government said it would graduate the first batch of the necessary unified forces by May 31st after several delays. The Minister of Defense and Veteran Affairs, Angelina Teng, later said the ministry was working closely with the National Transitional Committee, or NTC, the body charged with overseeing the implementation of the peace deal, to provide necessities needed to pass out these forces. And I quote, "We cannot afford to graduate these forces. I want to emphasize that it is what will give us lasting peace. We will see into it that these forces graduate before May 31st, end quote. As per the 2018 revitalized peace deal, South Sudan is supposed to train and graduate 83,000 personnel to take charge of security during the ongoing transitional period. These troops will make up the police, army, intelligence service, and prison services. The Transitional Unity Government, formed in February 2022, has in the past cited financial constraint for the delay in the graduation of unified forces. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Ethiopian rebels loot UN fuel. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way, but hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I meet and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Health ministers attending the World Health Organization's 72nd Regional Committee for Africa in Lomé, Togo, have approved an 8-year strategy aimed at curbing disease and responding faster to health emergencies. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than 400 people participated from 47 countries, including about 30 health ministers who attended the top annual health gathering in person, while others joined online. After a week of discussions about some of Africa's most pressing health issues, countries adopted a new strategy for creating more resilient public health systems for responding to infectious and chronic diseases such as diabetes. The World Health Organization says early diagnosis and care could save the lives of many of the millions who die from the diseases. The plan also commits countries to reach critical targets by 2030 to strengthen their ability to prepare, detect, and respond to health emergencies. The WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says the ministers also have launched a new campaign to curb sickle cell disease. She notes it is one of the most common yet least recognized illnesses in the region. However, like childhood tuberculosis, she says it has been pushed to the sidelines for far too long.
As we've seen with COVID-19, the impact of sickle cell disease extends well beyond health, posing significant economic and social costs for patients and their families. We can't afford to continue ignoring the threat. So greater investments and stronger collaboration and partnerships need to be prioritized. Childhood TB also doesn't typically receive much attention, even though one in every three TB cases among children globally occurs in our region.
She says both require timely diagnosis and treatment, as do other diseases such as monkeypox that go largely ignored until they make headlines elsewhere. Currently, she says 406 cases and 7 deaths have been confirmed across 11 African countries. While these are far fewer cases compared to other geographic regions, she says there is a need to increase the response. She notes there is a shortage of monkeypox vaccine, and whatever is available is being used in wealthier countries where the epidemic is raging. She says no monkeypox vaccines or antivirals are available in African countries.
We are making a plea that the situation that African countries have experienced with COVID-19 vaccines should not be repeated. And we are still hopeful that with the advocacy being carried out and the discussions with countries that are helping to produce the vaccines, that we may obtain vaccine supplies for African countries. This is not the case up to today.
Moeti says there is better news regarding COVID-19 coverage. She notes vaccination rates are going up among health workers, older people, and those at risk of severe illness, hospitalization, and death. While there is still much to be done, Moeti says she believes it is possible for African countries to catch up with the rest of the world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ethiopia's government has joined the World Food Program in condemning Tigrayan forces for allegedly stealing more than 500,000 liters of fuel meant for delivering food aid. For VOA News, Henry Wilkins reports.
David Beasley, head of the UN's World Food Programme, said Thursday on Twitter that Tigrayan forces stole 570,000 litres designated for humanitarian aid distribution in Ethiopia's embattled region of Tigray. The government demanded in a statement that the fuel be returned and the international humanitarian community take action against the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, or TPLF. The government has been fighting the TPLF for nearly 2 years. The news comes after a 5-month-old ceasefire came to an end Wednesday, with the government and TPLF blaming each other for a new offensive in the north of the country. Tigray has been under a humanitarian blockade for around 8 months. Humanitarian organisations say parts of the region are likely in a state of famine due to a lack of aid, the distribution of which is exacerbated by fuel shortages. Kjetil Tronvoll, a professor at Oslo New University College and an expert on the Ethiopian conflict, said on Twitter that a UN situation report stated the fuel had been loaned from Tigray authorities and claimed, therefore, that the TPLF was within its rights to take the fuel. A TPLF spokesperson could not immediately be reached for comment. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
We'd love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Jacob Diormatrang from Ural in Lake State says, the floods that have already captured most parts of Upper Nile and Unity States are disheartening. Is the right time the actors of both government and humanitarian agencies take action before it goes out of hand? This listener says, hey, VOA News. This is Guya Moses John, a South Sudanese refugee living in the Bidibidi refugee settlement. I'm writing that the killing of the gospel artist Yuma brought great loss to the people of Yei River State. May his soul rest in peace. Amen. Mal Adao Mal in Bortown says, hello, John and Nabil. It's very unfortunate if the accused diplomat is proven guilty in the court and must face the heaviest punishment for having tarnished both diplomatic and country image. It's absolutely unaccountable. A listener says, hello, I am Peter, a South Sudanese currently living as a refugee in Uganda. I love listening to the news every day, so my request is, if possible, connect me to have the news every day, because I will be going to school in the central area and all the radio stations won't have the news. So my request, please, if possible, send every day's news to my WhatsApp number. Thanks. I remain Peter Kenny Simon. Another fan says, hello VOA, I hope this message finds you well. My message to Kenyan leaders is that let them respect the constitution of their country and wait for the Supreme Court decision to either correct the decision of the Electoral Commission or denounce the court case by declaring the winner of the election and thanks by Pam Bilyodeng in the Juba IDP camp. Martin Manuel Wugol in Numuli says, hello, John and Nabil. I dearly thank His Excellency, the President and Honorable Minister, Dr. Barnaba Marielle Benjamin, who visited Miss Deaf Africa in her hospital bed in an effort to fly her out for further specialized treatment in Kenya. On behalf of the South Sudanese people and the family of Miss Deaf Africa, allow me to wish her a quick recovery. In God's name, we praise. Amen. Mabor Aladringo in Rumbek in Lake State says, as the world celebrates the International Humanitarian Day on the 19th of August 2022, I am wishing all humanitarian workers a happy celebration. All humanitarian workers are facing a lot of challenges in our country due to insecurity, but they manage to deliver services to the community. We appreciate their tireless work. Also, the government should provide full security to their working environments. Mading Malual Alwong from Malakal Town says, I quote Dr. John Garang de Mabior in one of his speeches that there are people sleeping comfortably right now. They don't know hunger or the sound of gun. After our job is done, a generation will take over. They will cut up a large piece of land and sell it for a bottle of beer, which is apparently the reality. Baiga Esteban Wani from Yei River County says, the liberation of this country was not to kill innocent people like our popular artist Yuma and many others in our country by our professional so-called SSPDF soldiers. You should be ashamed of yourselves as acting in an unprofessional way. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing your thoughts. Keep those comments coming.
Keep your comments brief and we shall sample some of them on Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We'll now leave you with the song Do Kunan.
I took the baby, Do Kunan. I can remember your jokes every night. You told me this and you told me that, so oh yeah. Hey, your body controls, baby, your body took control over me. Give me attention, talk now, we attempt to talk. And this my reaction, baby, but man, this is your chance. I don't, talk now. My little, 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 okay.
have been listening to their song Dokunan. I'm your host, John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I don't want to see you later, but right now, let's begin the book.